This week on The Droids, we're talking about Andor, Episode 4. Oh, we're building up. We're building up to something beautiful. This week, so much to talk about with this episode, and we're going to talk about that and so much more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris, I am Mike, and oh, does this feel right. Just wow. Chris and Mike back again, the original duo of The Droids. Chris.
Wow, the dynamic duo is back. Here's how it all started. It's like a prequel episode.
Was it March of 2017? Was that, I think, when we began? And we really only got, what, one episode of Freedom before someone, kicked the door in and joined the pod?
Well, we invited them on, and then it felt like the next episode they showed up again.
Yeah, they were just like, we're here.
It's completely within our control to say no, but you know, honestly, we didn't need them.
You're right. And Chris, this episode of Andor was a lot about internal politics in a workplace.
Exactly.
And if anything, it reflected what we deal with on this podcast
on a
week
daily
to
basis.
Week.
Yeah, on a daily basis.
We're always jockeying for who has what position, who's got the power of the podcast.
I mean, Sam and Ryan aren't on the pod tonight, but where are they? Was that our doing? Are they in prison?
Chris,
we don't know.
Don't give away any of the clues to where people might find their carcass. Oh, wait, sorry.
Car keys,
car keys.
Yes.
Car keys. We will have Ryan and Sam back soon enough.
Yes.
But Chris, let's talk about this episode of Andor. I don't think there's any other news to get into, but this was a deep and really filled, exposition-filled episode with a lot of new characters. We visited many different places, all of them feeling fully realized, and I loved watching what were beautiful settings. Plus, we returned to the holiest of places, Coruscant.
That, to me, right from the get-go, that I had a warm smile on my face right when I saw the they did the cool thing where outside of the planet, it's just like giant circles of like light. I mean, it felt good to go back there. I know I tease that we're always on Tatooine or the same thing. There's your fan service. We're back on Coruscant. I was really happy that they showed it like a little bit more during the daytime too, which is like typically that's kind of like prequel era Coruscant. And is it for the record? Is it Coruscant or Coruscant? Do we know?
I say it
either way. Coruscant. Good. That's good.
So I'll accept Coruscant if you're trying to
Coruscant. That's how they say it in Jersey. No, I was happy to be back there. We had not visited there. They've teased us with other city build planets in the sequel trilogy, and for some reason, everyone was like real reluctant, and even in Obi-Wan. But now we're back, and it feels good.
Well, it also felt nice. I appreciate that they're nodding to the fact that there could be newcomers to Star Wars watching this show. And so it says capital of the galaxy.
Yes.
And I know there's a lot of other people who probably are like, there's not enough newcomers who are totally unfamiliar with Star Wars to watch Andor as the first thing that they ever see. But I do think for the casual viewer, for those who've watched the original trilogy, watched the prequels, but probably didn't pour their entire time over it like we do in a podcast weekly.
Right.
I think that was a nice little touch because...
Yeah, I mean, even at that, if you are a watcher of all the stuff, I mean, it helps to have a little refresher. What is it? Croissant? That's it. He was definitely at a continental breakfast and said, this will be a good city name. He was in New York. He's staying at the Plaza.
Oh, he was with Eloise? Him and Eloise?
Saw the croissant and said, that's it. Croissant.
Are you sure it wasn't a food court where George was at?
Yeah, exactly. The famous one. Yeah. We have to make our pilgrimage there one of these times and do the pod from that seat. But no, you're right. The fact that it had the kind of the lower third with the naming, which is a cool thing that Rogue One started to do. I mean, it's helpful. It feels like it's a way to kind of make the storytelling its own. I feel like the original trilogy and kind of the core canon of Star Wars, the nine movies now, does very little to kind of break that fourth wall. And you could see some of these side projects a little more using the form to modernize it a little bit, which mm-hmm. I kind of think is cool in some circumstances. I think they did it in the first three episodes when they kind of showed the computer text message and that kind of stuff. There is a lot to ingest in this. So I think any little help they can give us is a little bit of a welcome retrieve.
Well,
You can retrieve or reprieve it, whatever
you want to do.
I reprieve.
But I think I know I'm introducing this to my parents at some point, and they will not remember what is the capital of the galaxy.
Yeah, so, exactly. Like a casual fan, even if you're big fans, you're not going to be like, oh, what was that place? Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it's this show, I believe, is like a gateway show to Star Wars in some respects.
Yeah.
To me, I think you learn a lot about the world, and then you can see the characters play within it, and the characters are almost constantly at an even clip describing the world they live in based on their actions and the, as Ryan would say, superbly written dialogue.
Well,
kept up this episode.
Without a doubt. And I mean, but again, building this world and having it be so lived in throughout, there were so many different times, even where this character who, her name fails me, but the new Imperial officer who's part of the Imperial Security Bureau, where very much like Cyril in the first three episodes, we're watching her in her buildup to joining her day job. Like, you know, she's been in this, they say, for several months already, but you see her approaching the office. You see her walking up to it. And I think there's just something to me about the way that that's done to see how people live their daily lives within this world, which, you know, Cyril making his way back down into the planet's depths where he then finds his mother who slaps him across the face. But you see, you see some of like, oh, when you're walking down a long hallway, there's going to be just information on screens around you. There's just stuff that is starting to make it feel like, ooh, what is living in this world like living in this galaxy?
And I feel like we haven't got that in a while. Yeah. And it's you forget this is what makes Star Wars so exciting is that when you learn new things about a world far, far away.
It really is. And so much of this continues to educate us more. I mean, I think some of the class, we're jumping around a little bit, but like the class system that we are witnessing. And I don't think the focus on what's going on with Mon Mothma is mostly about that. It's interesting that in a very brief scene, we pretty much know everything we need to know about her relationship with her husband. And that was jarring in the sense of you could see the dismay, the frustration, the internal politics of their family relationship again, and how people do that, and how people will be like, oh no, yes, I'm inviting over the person who does support this horrible atrocity that has happened or has taken part in this atrocity through political manner, but yes, you're going to have to deal with that because you're my spouse or my partner. And it's just perfect. Right. It feels again so relevant to situations that we all deal with right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking, like, the original trilogy was written for the... I keep bringing up the original trilogy because this is obviously a sequel to... Or a prequel to that, but it's, in some ways, kind of echoes the fact that the original trilogy was written for the time to point out, in popular culture, what was going on in the culture at that time. War and kind of this political battle. This show is doing that. It's not shying away from that aspect. And that's actually a surprising viewpoint, I think, that Star Wars hasn't really got into. Like, I feel like Rogue One was really... it was showing us something that we already knew existed in Star Wars and was just kind of depicting it in a dramatic way. We didn't know, like, the finer details that led to this show, but I think this show is actually giving us commentary.
Yep,
and I don't know, we haven't seen that. And I mean, you could argue in some respects that this is like the only kind of like, not the only, but it is a groundbreaking Star Wars in that fact that it's actually trying to use the medium to tell something rather than, I mean, a generalized message of hope and that kind of thing. Wonderful. All for it. Keep giving it to me. It's great. But this is actually, I think, pointing out some things that we're currently living in.
It is. And it's... I don't know. It seems, again, that relatable, that present, but also in like the day to day. And I go back to the office politics and we go back to the Imperial Security Bureau where everybody's jockeying for their position. But then the Major Partagas, I don't even know if that's how they say his name.
It's a lot of new names.
But he's calling out like, show me the data. Show me the data that backs up this claim. I'm not going anywhere. We're not doing anything if you don't have the data to go with it. We don't make decisions as a business, as an empire, without the data to back it up. And I'm like, oh, I've had that meeting. I'm okay. Yeah, no, this doesn't feel like my regular life, too. All right, yeah. Can't go on the gut instinct anymore. You gotta use the data.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Like, is this the escape? Is this how people felt watching the original Star Wars back in the 70s, were they just like, this
well,
is too close
to home? Well, there were a lot of chokings in office meetings during the 70s.
Exactly. Her name is Dedra Miro, or Deidre. I don't know how you'd say it. We'll have to...
Well, that's actually, I think, the thing about it is that you watch this a second time, and it's going to be a lot easier to pick up those names and know the pronunciation, because you're just trying to catch it the first time through.
Exactly. Supervisor kind of dressed like Krennic.
Yeah,
they're adopting the more gray uniforms.
But you just have
to make the full switch to the dark gray.
Well, I probably not until this series is over, because we saw what they wear in Rogue One.
Right, exactly.
But that whole scene is just layered with so much among it, where there's the one officer who's not doing his job well enough, the supervisor who then immediately loses it and gives it up. But yet, across the board, we continue to see these incredible actors who get, like, four lines, and yet you're like, wow, okay, yep, believe every bit of that.
Just all these brilliant, just, like, English, and I don't mean this in a diminishing term, just, like, character actors. Like, everyone playing their part. Everyone has a motivation. You can see them around the board. It's like Dr. Strangelove around, like, in the big round table. Like, everyone is someone, and... It's kind of neat to see the Empire like figuring it out, I guess. Yeah. Like it's clear the chain of command that we all know what their mission is. And it's kind of neat to see like the person that's conducting that meeting. They know what's like, or seemingly they think they know like what the ultimate goal is. Like, it's cool to see each layer like jockeying to like do what the Empire wants to do. Mm-hmm. But like at the end of it, we see these people like Deidre, like wanting to impress, like they kind of pulled it. Like, I thought she was like a spy at first, but then now I don't think that.
Yeah. Cause she's sort of shown what her purpose and her intent is.
Right.
And not getting that feeling. But I also, the buildup of all of this character building that they're doing throughout, where we lead to these more action-packed moments or these more defining moments of who these characters and what their arcs will be, will pay off in spades greater, because we know so much about who they are and what they want. And that's just so wonderfully refreshing to have this much time to get to know these characters. And they're doing it so well that we don't even need a ton of time, because it just feels like it's really well written enough that I know who they are. But the more time I spend with them, the more interactions between Deidre and the lieutenant that is on Ferrix, that is interrogating everyone and saying that the Empire is taking over and immediately kicks out Cyril from his job and everybody else.
Right.
That little back and forth that they have to go over to the Major, and then it's all just layered so well. And makes me just want to live in these episodes as long as possible. And it makes me feel like it is such a treat to be here, and that this show is the 12 episode show. We didn't get 12 episodes of something that didn't have all this to say.
It's a real surprise. Like, it, this is like, if you like those shows that are like the startup company TV shows.
Oh yeah.
Like, this is like, you're like watching like Empire Startup. Like, this is like, you're seeing them, because usually you see the Empire so confident and we all know their goals and everything. Like, but now this is like, wow.
Chris,
no.
I can tell you the Empire didn't build out their HR department.
Yeah, exactly. They're having some troubles there. I mean, just you brought up the scene where he's kind of addressing the security firm and then like the lieutenant who wasn't there to do his job and all that stuff. I thought an amazing line of that scene was like, he's like, well, you rang the bell. Like, I want you to feel this moment. Like, you're the one that made the Empire take full control of this planet. Oh. like that is a terrible feeling.
for the guy who was just young, ambitious, and was like, no, I'm going to use this to up my rank and impress everyone. And yet here he's ruined the entire planet for everyone.
Doomed. Yes, he's doomed a planet that was in probably otherwise would be left alone. That's the thing, is like they weren't stirring the pot, and so they were probably fine. They had the security agency that was in their pocket controlling stuff, and then went out of control, and all of a sudden, guess what? Empire's not having it. They don't want a mess. They want to take care of it.
Yep. But speaking of great lines, to go back to that scene in the Imperial Security Bureau, the Major saying, what is it we do here? What define what we do? And she reads back the textbook definition. Then he says, absolutely incorrect. We are here to suss out the disease before it spreads, which was just wonderfully written. I mean, we knew that kind of thing was going to come up, but I was like, okay, yes, thank you for painting that picture so perfectly for me, because I know exactly the intent of this group and the difference between who he is and what he knows this is meant to be and why he is the leader that he is in the evil empire,
but right, exactly.
He's
leading
to what they need to do as their evil mission.
Somehow that made him seem more evil than he appeared to be. And it did such an effective job, because it's like, oh wow, this guy's like, he's full on, he's bought into, like, he is a full company man. He is not.
And he doesn't need the Force to be evil. We don't need to see him use the dark side. We don't even need to see the Emperor over his shoulder. He's got enough of that, and that actor coming over from Game of Thrones as well, just wonderfully cast.
Oh man, everyone in that scene was perfectly cast. I feel like it. Maybe it's just because that everyone kind of looked like a 1970s Empire person. Like, it just felt like, I feel like we strayed away from that for a while, and now it's like we're back in it.
No, I know. You were talking about it before. Just, it's nice to have the British evil, and it's like, well,
exactly. And they have like the bushy sideburns, and like there's some bald people in there. I appreciate that.
Well, they're not messing. You know, again, this is why it feels lived in. You have real people. Yes, they're very good actors, but there's real people and real idiosyncrasies and mannerisms and appearances, and it just all makes it feel more appropriate.
I keep trying to compare, I shouldn't do this, but I keep comparing it against the other shows, which I all enjoyed immensely. And it's not like it's not a slight to those shows, but this show feels like it has something. And I maybe in 12 episodes, I'll be able to name it. It feels like it has something the other shows don't. And I don't know if that's just the way it's written or if it's the way it handles itself. I don't know what that is, but this to me feels more not a fair statement and kind of not the best fan sentiment, but this feels more Star Wars, I think, than other things have in a while. And it could just be because we're learning so many new things, and maybe that's it.
Well, again, it's like, we don't know where this story is going, which is a wonderful feeling, because even though we know that Cassian Andor meets his fate in Rogue One, there's so much more to fill in there. We really have nothing else about his story other than Rogue One. I'm sure there's some comic books or some side stories. But all of this, and we talked about it with The Last Jedi, this feels like something that has a vision. We know who's writing this. Maybe. Whether it's right, it ends up being really well, you know, finalized or comes to a T in the end. It is so well thought out that you know that they are writing with a purpose. And as you watch it, you're just excited to see where it goes, rather than being like, is this going to even fulfill my expectations? You don't care about expectation because you're just lost in it.
I'm genuinely curious at what's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, especially the way this episode sets things up. Oh, I think when we have, help me out with the name, Old Rebel Man.
Oh, Luthen?
Luthen, the fact that he kind of drops Andor off as Clem, and then...
Oh, Clem.
Yeah, so we're seeing... Do we know? We don't know why he picked Clem, do we?
No, we don't have any idea.
Okay, and I feel like maybe we'll find that out. Maybe we won't. From that point on, then when he then goes back and like puts on the makeup And like all of a sudden, you get to see like, oh, this guy's like, he's a real spy. Like he is a real secret agent. Yeah. Like he is, he's doing the work. And I thought that was very, very cool. Especially like you go to the little art dealership, like people in Star Wars buy art. I didn't know that. I assumed they probably did, but like now we know these things. And Mon Mothma was the senator. We get to learn a little bit about the Senate there, how they're kind of like almost just like a rubber stamp Senate now. Like it doesn't matter. And they're like picking off senators left and right.
Yep.
The ones that aren't buying into the whole thing. So all of this was in one episode.
I know.
Like we learned.
We haven't even talked about being on Aldahani, the planet where he goes, where our new Clem ends up.
Yes. So, old man Rebel, he goes to Coruscant, and then now we go to Aldahani.
Well, before we leave him going to Coruscant, Chris, I now am going to start every day with that sort of like bow hand motion he does after he puts his wig on to get himself back into character. That's get how I'm going to start my day.
Yes. To make himself look some in the kind mirror. Of weird aristocrat art dealer. Yes, exactly.
I apparently don't have enough rings, and I think I need
exactly.
Add to that.
Just the details were great. But like as soon as you put that wig on, as soon as you saw the rings, I was like, you know who this person is. Like,
oh yeah. Well, I think one of the funniest things, and I think I mentioned on the pod before, I just have a blind spot for movie and TV show wigs. Because I always am like, that wig looks great in a TV show or movie. Like in real life, no, it never looks good. But I'm like, wow, that looks great. His hair looked really real. How did he get it to like totally connect in that easily? But cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm that same way with CG. I can't.
Oh, yeah, that's right, Chris.
Unless things don't actually, the only way it fools me is if I know that thing doesn't actually exist.
Well, Chris, we cannot put you in the volume because you're going to just walk right into that wall thinking,
I don't know where I'm going to go. Yeah.
You're going to be like Wile E. Coyote walking into the wall
exactly,
with a painted tunnel.
Exactly.
Well, we find Luthen dropping off Clem. And they have just a nice back and forth again. Just a, you know, this is about still so far. It's a long road to get Cassian to buy into the rebellion,
right?
Rather than still just looking out for himself. And I like that they kind of keep coming back to that. That we're gonna watch him over two seasons and 24 episodes become someone who is obviously just finding his way to survive, to giving himself for the rebellion and being completely committed to the whole thing. So I'm really excited about that, especially because we got to know, once again, in a very extended period of time, how he interacts with other people in the Rebellion who, right now, he doesn't even know. I just liked all the time sitting around the campfire, the questioning that they all had for him, the pushback from Vel, that she didn't even want him to come along. It just felt very natural, even though I've never been part of some sort of giant espionage mission.
Exactly.
That they would natural. Be questioned. That they would question him that much, and I just thought it was all really well done.
Yeah, it definitely brings up kind of the starts of how does someone go from not in a rebellion, if I put it in simple terms, to how they end up in Rogue One, right?
Yeah,
and I think that the people around him, like, they appreciate his skill, and it's always great to have a character in the room that's like, here's what you gotta do, like like he clearly is he has value to bring to the table. Everyone saw that. He is kind of feeling it out, but he's still not buying it in. Like, he's not bought in yet.
Yeah.
And I keep thinking up to Saul, basically. Like, that's one group of rebels, and then you had the other group of rebels that were like a little less extreme in the two respects. And like, I wonder if it's gonna hit that point where like he's working for him, but then it's kind of like, this is too much.
We can use a
better way. Like, that's my thought is, because the group is kind of, although they're together, they don't seem like they're quite all on the same page yet.
Yeah.
Like, they seem a little like, what are we doing? This is almost like, this is crazy. Are we fully in yet? And I think that's kind of like the starts of how rebellions work. Like, if you look at kind of like things in like South America, like Che Guevara and that kind of stuff, like these like real grassroots operations where it's like a few people that are like, hey, this is how I think this should go, this is how I think this should go, and then you have then one person has kind of like the manifesto, like who is that at this point in the story?
Yeah, we don't, it's not clear, right? I mean, we're still not there.
we don't know yet, right? Yeah. Like, so this is just one little cell that's hidden on this planet that was like, what did they say? Like, basically, they pushed out the people that live there, and they all live in the city now. Mm-hmm. But then the ones that live out in the country are kind of like, no one messes with them because they're dangerous.
Well, or they're just like, they're sheep herders or, you know.
Right,
nomads,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're either, matter. Yes, they're either dangerous or harmless.
Yeah, yeah. And it was just, you know, I felt, again, that everybody seemed pretty fully realized with limited even dialogue from the group of those who are all part of this upcoming mission. And then having Eben Moss Bachrock in here, Skeen, who's from The Bear and has been in numerous other things. He was in Girls. He was in, but
yeah.
Having him show up, all I wanted was from his character from The Bear, Richie, to like be in this and be like, and just come up, who the fuck you think you are, Clem? Coming, just like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, that guy definitely has that like, I've not seen The Bear, but like, I've seen him in other things. That's totally his attitude. Like, he's going to be a problem, I think. Like, there's going to become a time.
But it's also because of The Bear, like, Richie doesn't like when, you know, he comes in, when The Bear comes in. And so he's basically saying, you don't change things around here. And I would have loved to have had like a similar reaction.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, yeah. I mean, this guy's going to be a problem. Like, I think it's going to come down to some decisions, and he's not going to be on board. That's my theory. Yeah.
You know, I think if Richie's got a problem with Carmi, he's got a problem with Cassian or Clem.
Exactly.
You need to watch The Bear. Everybody should watch The Bear.
There you go. And plug
then,
for The Bear.
And then get yourself an Italian beef sandwich. And
I'll do one of those things.
I think I know which one. But yeah, I just... It was just kind of funny, and I probably should have tried to like work on my impression, but knowing that you haven't watched the episode, it wouldn't, or the show yet.
I mean,
my impression of him in
the sounded like a great sounded like a great impression to me.
Yeah, I don't. I just said the F word, and that was basically it. That's all that mattered. So, but it was nice to spend that time there, and them walking through the plan, and the plan not being something they walk through, and then 3 seconds later, we're seeing the plan be executed. Like, I like that there's, let's talk about the plan, let's take some time to review the plan, and let's think more about this. I don't know.
Yes, I was a little worried. I was like, oh, that's what the show is? Every episode, we're going to be doing a heist, and that's it? And I was fine with it, whatever, but this is the heist. They're going to steal all that money.
Which is...
What is it? What is it the money from? It's the...
payroll.
The quarterly
payroll for the Empire.
That's like, I mean, that's like a, almost like a Cold War tactic. Like, you can't pay your troops, they're going to get angry. Like, this is it. This that now they're in it. I love the detail that the guy that built the model, because when I first saw the model, I was like, wow, that's really nice. And then when he's about to move it, he's like, don't do it. I don't want you to scratch it. That... I know Tony Gilroy said there's no fan service. That's anyone that's collected any Star Wars item. That is full on fan service right there.
Oh, you are right on with that.
Yeah,
I love it.
That was one for us. That's great.
Well, they walk through everything. Obviously, the mission coming up in 3 days. I love that we get an idea of what that end shot of the trailer was, where they're flying through what seemed like a rainbow star field. In the end of the trailer. Well, clearly that's where they're headed with this mission, because they talked about the meteor shower that's like a curtain across the sky that the native Aldahani all come to witness, but there won't be as many because they're all down in the city. But they have that brief window where they can somehow pull this off, giving us, you know what it reminds me of in that time constraint, is how great Top Gun Maverick is, that you know exactly the time constraint that they have to perform the mission. Well, here we go again. I don't like... We know that this is kind of broken up into 3-episode chunks. Episode 6 is, and I'm not saying episode 5 isn't going to be great. Episode 5 is going to be great too.
Yeah.
But episode 6 could be this race against the clock for that entire mission,
I mean,
which could be amazing.
I like to call it problem solving filmmaking, and it's just inherently compelling to me to see someone to have a problem, to see them come up with a solution and then execute it almost like in real time as far as the show goes, like, that's exciting. Like, that's a lot of fun. And the show is doing this. I had, Mike, that's so funny you mentioned Top Gun. I had the same exact thought when they were describing. I was like, they probably watched Top Gun. It's been out for a few years. Like, it's been made for a few years.
Oh, so they got an insider screening before
exactly.
They made
maybe
this?
Yeah. Maybe they went to a screener.
Yeah, there's probably some crossover in somebody from Top
there's
Gun.
There's
got to
be, yeah.
Yeah, they shot it a while ago.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other things I love in this is the setting. I don't know where they shot this episode when they were on Aldhani, because that was obviously beautiful, but again, them walking through the mountains.
Gorgeous, yeah.
And just having it feel real was one thing. But then you flip it to Coruscant, and I love the way they shot it, especially as Mon Mothma is pulling away in her ship or making her way back to her home, where when you shoot something tight enough that it doesn't feel like the actor or actress is bleeding through the green screen. Like, it felt much more realistic that we were seeing Coruscant reflected in the glass as we watch her face, because you can spend more time with these incredible actors and actresses, letting them emote and let the surroundings still be there. And we can paint the rest of that surrounding picture in our head. I like that.
I mean, yeah, it's less is more. It's smoke and mirrors. Like, they were very much able to be concerned with what we see in the frame rather than what's not in the frame. And I think that's, or I guess maybe it helps us visualize what's not in the frame, but they're not going for the picture. Like, they're not afraid to let us think about it, which I think is very good filmmaking, in my opinion.
Yeah. Please dish out more of it. And speaking of, again, set design and what we're doing here where we're not on the volume, they made and they found the setting for Mon Mothma's home stunning. Just stunning.
Incredible.
Some of it may be CG. I couldn't pick it up. But the indoor trees that she has before they lead into the dining room with the, octagon interiors, like doorways between rooms,
those doorways that look like they kind of like turn on their sides and to shut.
I mean that just was stunning. And once again showing the discrepancy, like, from a group of rebels who are out in the wilderness to the opulence of, and we know she's not a villain, but this is still the difference of what the galaxy has to offer. And for those who are in power, I don't know, it was very jarring and very visually stunning and to see this beautiful setting that they created.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think in this time in Star Wars, as you're introduced to it in the original trilogy, you're kind of like, they always refer to it as the used universe.
Yeah.
And Coruscant still exists, but like Coruscant, I feel like if you were to parallel real life, maybe Coruscant was more like New York City in the late 70s, 80s, where it at one point was this like magical kind of pristine, seemingly according to media, was this really nice shiny place, but then it kind of got gritty, and those who lived there just kept living there, and then I think we're kind of seeing this with Coruscant. Now, like, this is post prequel trilogy, and the prequel was supposed to be kind of like this shiny, like, gothic 1920s kind of, like, everything was pristine and shiny and like large archways and things like that. And then all of a sudden, how does it go from that to what we see in the original trilogy? So we're seeing those little snippets of transition, I think, now, where the difference is they're going to have to at some point start to like meet in the middle. Like, at what point does Coruscant look like old and dated?
Yeah.
Like, I hope we get to see that.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't think obviously we'll see it in this series, but it would be cool. It would be like the last days of Coruscant get its own story.
Right.
I would be on board with that. I think that would be pretty special.
That'd be kind of fun.
You know, otherwise I think we've covered a lot of what this episode is, Chris. I just continue to just be impressed. One of the things I was thinking about with Mon Mothma being in this, and speaking of the time we're going to have in the Senate, and with her, I know it's not possible because the timeline doesn't make sense, but I just kind of want Natalie Portman time in the Senate with yeah. Tony Gilroy's writing. I would love that if she wasn't already dead and yeah. we were past the prequels.
We could have...
But yeah. doesn't it feel like she could easily walk into a scene with Mon Mothma right now and just they could have a little back and forth about yeah. what's going on, I mean, in the Senate?
Yes, you just keep going back to like those opening scenes in the prequel trilogy with just them kind of walking around those nice maroon carpeted rooms. Like, them to go to that, to the Senate,
yeah.
and have some kind of debate. I mean, do you think we'll get a little emperor? I know, going off the fan service thing, but I mean, if it's motivated and correctly placed, like, do you think we'll see the emperor in the Senate?
Ooh, you know, so one of the things that's been really striking to me about this so far, there have been no CGI characters and yeah. no masked animatronic characters that have right. had like speaking roles yet, right? I mean, there's been the droid. There's been the droid that was in the first couple of episodes.
Yes.
That was kind of the one thing that felt along the lines of like an animatronic or a special effect yeah. as a character. And I'm sure we'll get there. We'll probably have something else. But it feels like that would take us out of the world of what sure. this has been for this show. Because yeah. if they could have him be the Chancellor without him having been marred by, you yeah. know, Mace Windu.
That's true.
That yes. would feel like, okay, sure. I could easily watch some scenes yeah, and have that that's be
kind
fitting.
Of the, that's kind of the vision I had in my head. Yeah. But yeah.
But it would, I guess you could do it. But it would. Yeah. I feel like it would take away from, and it will feel weird to say, like the realism of this show.
Yeah, I get it.
There's not really a realism, but it just feels very much like real character dynamics. And then you bring
We don't need yeah. it.
But you bring in a cartoonish villain, and he is yes. cartoonish as much as we love
him. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He definitely is. He's shooting lightning out of his hands. It's definitely cartoonish. Yeah, we definitely don't need it. I think it's just lulling me back into that place where it's like, oh, I did this with Obi-Wan. I did this with all of them. It's always like all of a sudden your mind starts, you're just like, wouldn't it be cool if these guys came? But the show, I don't think the show would be better for it. But again, if it's well written and it's motivated and it makes sense, I'm all for putting other people in it that we've seen before. It doesn't have to be fan service. It's just got to make sense.
Well, I think I would even feel it was out of place if they interacted with a Jedi. Like if you just had yeah. two Jedi to come talk to Mon Mothma about yeah. some recent activity, it would be like, wait, is this the same show?
right. Yeah, that would be kind of wild.
But I say that is because we've asked for and wanted for so long to have a movie or a series from Star Wars about how the people live within Star Wars and how they right. live in the day to day. You know, we're getting that in spades. So to potentially go back to what we've seen so much on the pure fantasy mythos of what Star Wars has always been, it would just yeah. it would take away from what we're experiencing. But as you said, sure. there could be a way to write this that Tony Gilroy can do that I would not second guess yeah. that could absolutely yeah. make it all work and fit.
Sure. I do think, I mean, Rogue One kind of had that mysticism and wasn't directly
yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, pointed yeah. Yep.
pointed at the Force. I mean, Donnie Yen's character, I am one with the Force. Yeah. I would like to see something like that. You know what I mean? Yep. Like, show me that aspect, that kind of like mysticism where it's like, all right, maybe this guy, he doesn't know what the Force is exactly, but yeah. he knows there's something. And so this is what they're going to be true to. Like, that is cool. Like, that's yeah. a new angle on Jedi and things like that. Like,
yeah.
maybe there's other ways. And we know this through Last Jedi. We know this through the other movies. Like, there's other ways to connect to the Force.
Yeah, and I think that I would not have any issue with that being in there. And I think I'd love to see how they do incorporate it. There just hasn't even been a hint at the Jedi so far.
No.
And I honestly, I don't know that they're going to say the word Jedi in this series.
I don't think they are. I think
because they have been extinct now for a few years, at least supposedly. You know, obviously Mon Mothma, the Senate, they all right. remember them. But it's been the temple fell, what? This is 5 years before the Battle of Yavin, so like 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there?
I
think so. I think the
what's the time jump? Yeah,
the Revenge of the Sith isn't it meant to be about 15 to 20 years before A New Hope?
Wasn't 30?
Oh yeah, it was 20 because yeah. Luke is 20. Luke is born at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
There you go.
So this being 5 years before the Battle of Yavin, it's about 15 years is the difference.
Right. So that's it. Just yeah, because you're right. Because wait, when was Rogue One then? That was just
Rogue One is Battle of Yavin, so it's right at that same time.
How long does the original trilogy? Is that like 3 weeks? What is the time?
I think
is it a very short or something?
I think it's like 2 or 3 years. I think
2 or 3 years. Okay,
I think I have to go back and look at it.
Yeah,
listeners, write in droidspot@gmail.com. Yeah, let us know how many years was it.
Tweet at us. And you know what? If you like what you're hearing on these episodes, don't be afraid to leave a little review.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
We'd love to hear from you on there.
I think, you know, we might get a little bit of a different review the way we're approaching these episodes versus those who said we don't even like Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can buy this. We're enjoying this a lot.
Well, the other thing I want to give credit to is Susanna White, who directed this episode. I thought this was beautifully directed. I really loved it. And it made me again think of where we're getting these little moments and these pauses and these, you know, hesitations from characters, where we're sitting with characters, where I just thought, wow, this is so well paired with the writing that, like, Tony Gilroy is fantastic, but they're also throwing great directors in here too.
Absolutely. Yeah. The content that these directors have to work with, and then also the density of the stuff, the coverage of this episode is great, and everything is making sense, and it also moves. Like, I never felt there was a lot in it, but I never felt bogged down. Like, I was always excited to get through a scene rather than, oh, I know what's going to happen here. And, like, there's a mode of storytelling they're doing here where we don't know what's going to happen, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen, as opposed to, like you said, here's the plan, show the plan. Yeah. Like, that's not happening in this show.
Yeah. This is Chris, I just can't believe we get to sit here for 9 more or 7 more weeks.
That's the thing. There's so much more. I was kind of like bummed that 3 of them came out at once. I was like, oh man. But now we have 9 more of these. It's like 9 little movies.
It is so great. I mean, like, and so many episodes of the Disney Plus series have been like, oh, that was like 26 minutes. Cool. Like, we're getting 49 like, minutes out of episode 4.
These are like hour long episodes.
This is awesome. This is so much fun. And you're right, dense is the perfect word for it. And dense while still being satisfying. I'm sure the great thing is I can't wait to talk to Ryan and Sam about their thoughts, because I think they'll probably have a whole host of other thoughts that didn't come to us. And this series, unlike a lot of the other, I've rewatched, you know, episodes of Obi-Wan, I've rewatched episodes of Mandalorian. This is the first one where I'm like, I can't wait to rewatch to see what else I learn from watching these episodes about the characters and the story. Like, it really demands that, because it is so dense and there's so many characters, that there's just so much more I feel like I can get from it by watching it again.
Yeah. It's just one of those good little Star Wars treats where you're getting new stuff, and like you said, it's not even about, like, making toy. To me, this feels like playing like the Star Wars card game, or like a board game, or like playing Dark Forces on your old PC.
Dark
like,
Forces, love it.
It feels like you're playing this like thing during a period of Star Wars where there was, even though we have a show every 3 months, so not fair to say, but it just feels like there was this weird like 90s period of Star Wars where it was like we were just getting a bunch of people trying stuff randomly. And I'm not saying this is trying randomly, but it feels like that era of, here's a story we want to tell in this time zone. It takes place in Star Wars. It's going to be cool on its own. And here it is. And we're going to get new phrases like, I don't know any yet, but like, we got Medkit out of the, like, we're going to get something out of this era that we're watching that'll be really cool and probably be taken on the future Star Wars things.
Yeah. Speaking of Andor toys, I see one Lego set, but it is not the Lego whorehouse I was hoping for. It is the Ambush on Ferrix. So you can get yourself a little Cyril Lego. That's something to be excited about.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah, and a little Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
The Cassian one doesn't look so much like Cassian Andor, because it's just like, you know, beard and flowing locks. Yeah. It just doesn't look like him at all.
I do like the hair, though. The hair is cool.
The hair looks good. I mean, look, none of us are going to say Diego Luna doesn't look good in this series.
Yeah,
he's looking pretty great.
He's got the hair, but just the one set, huh?
One set that I can tell so far from Andor. There's other sets. There's the $49.99 from Obi-Wan, the gray Obi-Wan and Darth Vader fight on a gray slab, which, you know, was a classic.
Yeah.
But no, nothing else that I see from Andor yet. I imagine there might be some stuff from later on in the episodes that we see, but so far, that's kind of where they're at.
Yeah, that's the thing. These Legos, sometimes they'll spoil it for you.
Well,
you gotta look out.
You gotta look out. Chris knows it all too well.
I knew it all too well.
Well, Chris, I think the only other piece of news that I wanted to talk about was that James Earl Jones has officially retired as the voice of Darth Vader, but that does not mean that we are done with his voice as Darth Vader. They will continue to have that be a part of it because they will use the technology that they were able to use for Obi-Wan to continue to bring his voice back to life, which will be kind of interesting. I mean, I thought it was incredible in Obi-Wan. I thought it sounded so good, but I also am kind of shocked and just thinking, wow, we just now live in a state where you could have actors, characters live on for decades. I'll be on.
I mean,
death.
If there's
not that we've lost James Earl Jones yet, but yeah.
If there's a franchise to do it, I mean, it's going to be Star Wars. I mean, we had CGI, what's his name?
Grand Moff Tarkin?
Yeah, we had CGI Tarkin. I think this is one of those things Star Wars does, is they find an angle and use technology to kind of to build something. I'm interested to hear it. Obviously, I would love it to be James Earl Jones forever. But I think it's a cool thing, especially with a voice that is basically as iconic as you're going to get in film. To have that kind of live on indefinitely is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is very cool that they can do it. I'm just, the oddity of that happening is just kind of,
it seems weird.
Yeah.
It seems very, very, very strange. And to the fact of, I almost wish they didn't like tell us right away. Cause now like, I feel like,
well, they didn't, they let those, the Obi-Wan episodes go out without saying it.
Well, that's impressive then.
Yeah, they did. That was fun.
It did the trick.
Well, I can't wait for more of this. I mean, Chris, if there's one toy that you would want from the first four episodes of Andor that they're not making yet, what would it be?
Hmm. Oh, wow. I mean, I got to go with the little like encampment thing. I feel like there's a lot of greenery, a lot of mountainsides. That'd be a pretty fun build. You get a speeder bike maybe come with it.
Mm, the speeder bikes, I've got a couple of them so far in the show, which I like.
Yeah, I'm into that.
All right.
How about you?
Well, I mean, I already talked about the brothel. I'll take one of those.
Exactly.
As a Lego set. But otherwise, you know, again, I they're not like teeing this up for toys. And
no. The scenery is not there.
It's fine. I'm happy.
About a little
about
art,
that.
Little mini art gallery. That'd be
fun.
Ooh,
I would like that. Did you notice in the background some Mandalorian armor?
I did not.
Yeah, there was some Mandalorian armor.
Mandalore would have fell by now.
Oh, exactly. So not surprising that someone in the trade would have some Mandalorian armor to sell.
Leave it to the Empire to steal some artwork.
Oh, boy. Oh, that Empire.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. We're going to be back for episode 5 next week. We'll be with you every single week, living our lives in Andor and getting excited to dive deep in the density of what Tony Gilroy has brought to Star Wars. Chris, always a pleasure.
Always, Mike.
That is going to do it for the droids you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast. What they
grow? Annie?
Carcasses? Wait.
Car-keys.
Car-keys. That's it. That was what it
Car-keys.
Was. Car-keys.
Croissant. We have to go to croissant.
Are you Ferrix and Chrissix?
Chrissix. On Ferrix to get some croissants on Coruscant. Have fun editing that, Ryan.
Oh, that was fun.